Today's scripture comes from chapter 6, 1-11. It can be found in your pew Bible on page 894. One Sabbath day, Jesus was walking through some grain fields. His followers picked up the heads of grain, rubbed them in their hands, and ate them. Some Pharisees said, "Why are you doing that? It is against the law of Moses to do that on the Sabbath day." Jesus answered, "Haven't you read about what David did when he and those with him were hungry? David went into God's house. He took the bread that was made holy for God and ate it. And he gave some of the bread to the people with him. This was against the law of Moses. It says that only priests can eat that bread." When Jesus said to the Pharisees, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath day." On another Sabbath day, Jesus went into the synagogue and was teaching. A man with a crippled right hand was there. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees were watching to see if Jesus would heal on the Sabbath day. They wanted to see Jesus do something wrong so that they could accuse him. But he knew what they were thinking. He said to the man with the crippled hand, "Get up and stand before these people." The man got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is it right to do on the Sabbath day, to do good or to do evil? Is it right to save a life or to destroy one?" Jesus looked around at all of them. He said to the man, "Let me see your hand." The man stretched out his hand, and it was completely healed. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law became very angry, and they said to each other, "What can we do to Jesus?"
Thank you, Addison. Imagine a scenario with me, please. Imagine that you're driving down the road, you've been traveling for several hours, and it's getting closer to 6 o'clock, you're getting hungry, and you start getting a hankering for chicken nuggets and waffle fries and a lemonade, and maybe even some soft serve ice cream. You pull over at this exit where you see this restaurant, and you drive over and you realize the restaurant is closed, and you go, "Oh yeah, today is Sunday." You ever been in that situation? It's one of the famous slogans of this restaurant, "Closed Sunday." And we think about a number of other instances that we could draw to the table. One of the most famous stories that I know associated with the Sabbath or the day of rest was actually turned into a movie, but this movie's kind of old now. It was in 1981, Chariots of Fire. It profiled two British runners in the 1924 Olympics. One runner was Jewish, Harold Abrahams. The other runner was the son of missionaries, Christian missionaries. He grew up as a Christian. And it came time for the scheduling of the events, and they received notification of when their events would be. Abraham's received notice that his event was to be on Saturday. And Eric Little received notice that his event was going to be on Sunday. Both of them were men of faith, and they did not want to run on their holy days. So, if you know the story, what they did was they swapped events so that they could then run when they felt like they needed to run. We think about why we gather here in this building on Sunday. What is special about this day? How do you treat it? What is your concept of Sunday? Is it your Sabbath? And what does that mean? What things do you do on Sunday that you don't do on other days? And what things do you not do on Sunday that you do on other days? These are questions that we often ask. Though sometimes in our culture we look at differences that are changing, we think about a previous generation and blue laws, and now our generation, it looks more and more like people around us in particular, and sometimes even in our own lives, where Sunday is just another day. We ask ourselves this morning, what is different about our holy day? If we look back in the Old Testament, we certainly remember the Ten Commandments. If we don't remember many things from the Old Testament, we at least remember the Ten Commandments and the story of Moses, how Moses receives the Ten Commandments from God. We know generally some of the Ten Commandments about having no idols, having no other gods, honoring God's name, and then, of course, the regulations about our behavior, about not committing murder or adultery, not lying, and bearing false witness against a neighbor. All of those things. But in the midst of the Ten Commandments is the statement to honor the Sabbath day and to keep it holy. And of the different commandments, this is one of the longest sections. It then makes reference back to the book of Genesis and to the creation. You know, Genesis chapters 1 and 2 give us 6 days of creation and then a day when God takes a step back, rests, looks out over all the creation and pronounces it very good. Here in the Ten Commandments that Moses receives from God, that would then go on to structure the society, the social order among the Israelites. Here in the midst of it is this reference back to 6 days of work and a 7th day of rest. And that God consecrates the 7th day as a special day, one to rest and appreciate. But then if we look at Israel, what is Israel supposed to do on a day of rest? Obviously following God's example, appreciating all the work that you've done over the week, but then also using that day as a special day to draw closer to God. We're supposed to do that all throughout the week, but we set aside a special time of worship for that 7th day, and that indeed is what the Israelites did. It became part of their social fabric. But it didn't happen overnight, and it was something that would take time, just like all the other Ten Commandments and all the other regulations. And we do get some stories in the Old Testament, in these early books, that sometimes disturb us. And that's what we find here in Numbers chapter 15. Numbers 15, verses 32 through 36, offers a story about an unnamed man who gathers firewood on the Sabbath. The Sabbath has been designated as a day of rest, and now this man, we don't have a profile of him. We don't know anything about him. We don't know why he was out there gathering firewood on the 7th day. All we know is that he was violating the Sabbath and that some people nearby detained him and brought him to Moses. And here in Numbers, it tells us that the Lord said to Moses that the Israelite community was to take this man out beyond their camp and stone him to death. This is one of the harsh passages that we find in the Old Testament that become a challenge for us to interpret and understand today, and there have been various ways to try to make a distinguish between an Old Testament God and a New Testament God, but we Christians hold on to the fact that there's continuity between Old Testament and New Testament, and we'll get into some of that later. But there's a lot here that we just don't understand. The point, though, that is driven home is that the Sabbath is something that we are to take seriously, and that it is a social activity, that the community was there witnessing the violation of the Sabbath and administering the penalty, however harsh we see and understand that today. And so it's natural for us to see that the Jewish religious leaders would want to be very specific in describing and understanding a Sabbath. And so we see the priest in the succeeding generations reading through the law code, trying to apply the concept of Sabbath in all sorts of situations, in economics, in terms of forgiving debts every 7 years, or in letting land rest. If you're a farmer, letting a section of land rest for a seventh year. And if you read throughout Leviticus, you see many, many other examples about this concept of a Sabbath, a time of rest, and how important it was. And so that is the context for Jesus' encounter with the Pharisees in our passage from Luke this morning. And there are two specific examples, two encounters that basically relate back to this issue. And we study them closely to try to figure out, well, what did Jesus have to say about this day of rest, about the Sabbath? The first example is Jesus is traveling with his disciples and they're walking through a field of grain. They are hungry. They pick some of it, which is actually an action that was forbidden. And then they rub it in their hands to find the wheat to eat. And this was also seen as another act of work by the Jewish religious leaders. And so they're there. They start to reprimand Jesus for allowing his disciples to do this. Jesus responds by referencing something also from the Old Testament, something in 1 Samuel. He actually goes to the story of David. And you know, David growing up to be the next king, there was that period when Samuel had selected him to be king, but Saul was still king, and Saul found out about this, and David became a competition. So David was running for his life, and at one point he hides in the temple, the tabernacle at that time, and he is looking for food for himself and for his men. And he consults with the priest, and the priests look around, they can't find any food to give to David and his men except for food that had been consecrated, that had been set up for sacrifice. And according to the Jewish standards, only the priests could eat this bread. And yet the priests, violating the covenant, the law here, give the bread to David. So why would Jesus reference this? One, bringing up an example from the past where an extreme situation allowed for the bending of the rules. The other thing was that the Pharisees couldn't condemn what David did. David was this great, glorious figure in Israelite history, a great role model, despite his faults. And so here, the Pharisees weren't going to speak out against David. But then after Jesus has done that and the Pharisees are silent, Jesus says two things. One, that the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath, that Jesus himself is Lord of the Sabbath, which is a very powerful statement. It goes along with his statements about forgiving sins. But here, Lord of the Sabbath, and we'll unpack that a little bit later. And then secondly, he says that the Sabbath was made for us, not us for the Sabbath. This sounds very similar to what we saw last week when we were talking about fasting. You remember John the Baptist's followers come to Jesus and say, well, John taught us to fast. Why are you and your disciples not fasting? You remember what he said? He said, you don't put a new patch on an old cloth, and you don't take an old wineskin and put new wine in it. And we said last time it was, you need to find the fitting tool for the situation. And here, Jesus is saying something very similar, that the Sabbath is a tool used to draw close to God. You don't become obsessed with the tool and keeping it legalistically and lose touch with why it is there. So that's the first encounter over wheat. The second encounter has to do with a healing. Jesus is preaching in one of the synagogues there. The Pharisees are trying to set up a trap for him They take a man with a withered hand, and they know Jesus has healed a number of people by this point. They take this man to Jesus on the Sabbath. In the middle of worship, it would be like someone walking down the aisle in the middle of worship here and asking for a healing. Jesus, of course, doesn't ignore the man. He walks forward and offers a healing and says, importantly, is it permitted to do good or to do evil on the Sabbath? To save life or to kill? You know, in that question, the Pharisees once again are caught. They can't say, you're going to do something evil on the Sabbath. Instead, the question obviously is pointing them toward doing good. But they can't say that either because Jesus has just healed this man on the Sabbath, and that's what they're trying to contest. So in the midst of this, Jesus shows some anger, but Jesus also shows some pity toward these Pharisees because they can't participate in the celebration. The wonderful miracle of healing this man's hand, and they can't share in it because they're so tied up with their nitpicky details. And so those are the examples that we have of Jesus addressing the Sabbath. And so we ask ourselves today, have things changed much in our world today? We have people that completely disregard the Sabbath, and we still have people who are quite nitpicky about it and are judgmental about what other people do on the Sabbath. And so where do we find ourselves? The other thing is, we're not in a Jewish context anymore. We've gathered in a Christian church. We're on the other side of Jesus' ministry, his death, his resurrection. We are in a church, and now we are worshiping not on the seventh day, according to our calendars, but the first day. And we think about how the early church community and early Christians switched that day from the seventh day to the first day to honor not only a day of rest and worship, but also the day of Jesus' resurrection. And so that became the new model in Christian communities over the centuries. But then we still have some Christians over the years who doubt whether we should have done that and still want to hold on to a seventh day of rest. The most famous of these are Seventh-day Adventists. We have some 20 million Seventh-day Adventists in the world today. But I'm going to introduce you, perhaps some of you have never heard of a Seventh-day Baptist. There were Seventh-day Baptists even back there in the beginning as Baptists started to form in the 1600s. Some of the earliest examples of Baptists are in that first decade of the 1600s. But the 1640s and 1650s saw some other Baptists growing in England. And at that time, we also saw a group of Baptists that were not only questioning adult believers' baptism, which was a hallmark of being a Baptist, and religious liberty, but also what day to worship. And this small group established themselves, and they moved their day of worship back to Saturday. And it was actually here in the United States. The first Baptist church was in Providence, Rhode Island. And next door in Newport, we had one of the very first Seventh-day Baptist churches. And the Seventh-day Baptist actually had some influence on the very first Seventh-day Adventists. So you can't say Seventh-day Baptists started the Adventists, but they did have some influence there. So all of that is to say, there's still some confusion among Christians whether Saturday or Sunday. And we really get into some nitpicky, legalistic kind of things here, because if we start analyzing things closely, look at the names of our week. The names of our week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where do they come from? They come from the Greek and Roman names for the planets, which came from their gods and goddesses. And so if you call it Sunday or Saturday, you're actually making reference to those things. And so you can't be too nitpicky about these things. But let's say we do need a day of rest, a day of worship, whether it's Saturday or Sunday. And let's go with Sunday. The vast majority of Christians over the centuries have gone with Sunday. What do we know about Sunday as a Sabbath? The first thing is God created the Sabbath into the very nature of the universe. It was part of the very beginning. 6 days of creation and then a day of rest. That's there in Genesis. And that is what is referenced in the Ten Commandments. When you read the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, the whole reasoning for the day of rest is because God instituted it. It's part of the very creation around us. The second point is the Sabbath was part of the covenant with Israel. And even though some of us might find the Old Testament something distant and hard to read, it's still something that's important. It's still included in our Bibles. And Jesus himself, in the Sermon on the Mount, said that he came not to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill them. And so there, we look back at that, and we study Israel and their concept of Sabbath as a day of rest. And despite the harshness of things like Numbers 15, we still see the importance of the communal aspect of a Sabbath. And this is why we gather as a community on our day of rest. And it's important to acknowledge the day of rest as a community and not just individually. The third thing is Jesus himself said he is Lord of the Sabbath. And if our Lord is Lord of the Sabbath and he affirms that the Sabbath was made for us, then it is something that we should find important and something that we should try to keep. But Jesus himself warns us, even as we keep it, we should not become legalistic about it. That we should use that guiding principle that we are to do good on the Sabbath. And then finally, the fourth point, as Jesus himself has said, the Sabbath was made for us. And we look back at the story of creation. If God is the creator and has made everything around us and placed us in the midst of this world and given us the command to keep a Sabbath, then that concept of rest is crucially important for our health as well as our spiritual well-being. We draw close to God when we take a step back from our work, from our obsessions, and we focus quietly on worship and drawing close to God. And yet our culture is constantly pushing us in many different directions. And let me give you another example. I'm not a farmer, and I'm not up to date on all the intricacies of modern farming. But as an ethicist, I've studied certain elements of it and discovered that the certain push today for sustainable options is now critiquing the way farming has been done in terms of big farming and setting aside acres and acres and acres of growing the same crop year after year after year and then pumping all these synthetic fertilizers into the ground to try to make up for all the nutrients that have been used up. This is a dangerous practice, we are finding out, and that ultimately it may lead to creating a land that cannot produce the crops that we need. And it may lead to water shortages, all because we couldn't set aside some time for that land to rest. And the same kind of thing with our own lives. We sign on sometimes to companies that are so obsessed with a bottom line that they want to overwork us. And we get caught up in the mentality that we need to have more money to have more things around us and we have to work more to achieve it. And we take all sorts of supplements and energy drinks to try to push through those times when we're not sleeping or when we're not resting. And so all those are the negative sides of ignoring this. But think about all the positive things of honoring it. And I think about, and this is the final image I'll leave you with, a Garfield cartoon. I love cartoons, and this one stood out to me years ago. We know all the things that Garfield gets involved in. But one point, he's lying in his bed, and the alarm clock goes off, and he knocks it to the side, and he says, "Well, I'm glad today is Sunday because it is a day of rest." And you think about that. This is a moment that we can enjoy things. What did God do on that seventh day? Enjoyed the creation and pronounced it very good. There was a celebration. And we should come here on Sunday celebrating and resting and enjoying. And when we do bow before the Lord of the Sabbath, we will find peace and rest. This morning, this congregation offers an opportunity to you. If you've never made a commitment to follow Christ, this is a chance for you to do that in a community where we can talk with you and encourage you and discover what it is to be disciples of Jesus as a community. This is also a time if you need to recommit yourself, particularly in terms of setting aside a time of rest. If you become too wrapped up in careers or work, and you need a time to step back and rest and recommit to setting aside a time to follow Christ, this now is also your opportunity. As we as a congregation stand to sing hymn number 697, "The Way of the Cross Leads Home," hymn number 697, please stand together and sing.